From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on June 19th, 1865, Galveston, Texas. The Civil War was over. The Confederacy had lost. According to Dr. Lori Brooks of Fordham University, the news of General Robert E. Lee's surrender didn't reach, or perhaps wasn't allowed to reach, some people in Texas. And the night before, June 18, 1865, Union General Gordon Granger had arrived in Galveston. Texas had not been a central theater in the war, and General Granger announced that Lee had surrendered, the conflict was over, and black people who had been enslaved were now free. According to the proclamation, there were no longer owners and slaves. There were employers and employees working of their own free will. Juneteenth, of course, combines June and 19th, and it has become a national celebration. The modern celebration of freedom intensified in 1968 with the Poor People's March and Campaign. Following Martin Luther King's assassination, Reverend Ralph Abernathy led the campaign in the protests, and he wanted the campaign to conclude on a high note. The campaign chose the 19th of June. It capped off the occupation of the National Mall, and it offered a lens of defiance, but also celebration. Dr. Brooks says Juneteenth is an opportunity to remind all Americans about the tribulations of people of African descent and to raise up their cultural contributions. There will be events across the country on Friday, including here in Rochester. And our guests this hour will discuss the history, what's happening here, what they think we all should be thinking about. Welcome to the program, Reverend Myra Brown, pastor of Spiritus Christi Church and founder of the Spiritus Christi Anti-Racism Coalition. Welcome back, Reverend Brown.
Thank you, Evan. It's good to be back.
Wonderful to have you. Gloria Johnson Hovey is a race director for the Rock Juneteenth 5K Run and Walk. Gloria, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
Also with us is Elizabeth Osta, the co-chair of the First Universalist Initiative for Racial Equity. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you, Evan.
And Mary Hebron Smith is a member of Spiritus Christi Church and member of the Spiritus Christi Anti-Racism Coalition. Mary, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Reverend Brown, let me start with you. Juneteenth, Friday. How many Americans are aware of it? How many white Americans are aware of it? And how much is that going to be different this year than in past years?
Yeah, so I think there's very few. Not as many white Americans that need to know, right, what Juneteenth is. And I think that that's part of why we have to keep commemorating Juneteenth. While most people, most white Americans, don't know about Juneteenth, what's true is that we're still living with the legacy and the impact of slavery, right? Which is part of why we think it's important to keep not only remembering that experience, but to also to raise up that there were many methodologies, right, of slavery that grew out of that experience about black people being inferior and being less than whites in humanity and capacity and entitlement. And if they were a little bit less, then the reasoning would go that they deserve a little bit less and maybe a lot less. And so this racial hierarchy really was created in the experience of enslavement. And so even though the legal permissions for slavery happened in this country, the methodology, the myths of slavery, and the philosophies of slavery and what that continued to put on black people remains. And in truth, I think it's one of the reasons that the happenings with George Floyd ripped us so deeply in our hearts, because it really took us back to some of those mythologies and back to those philosophies about black and brown bodies and the entitlement to life.
Well, Reverend, let me start with you, and I'll ask all four of you to let our community know what you want them thinking about, whether it's events. We've got the race coming up, the virtual 5K run and walk, but also what you want people thinking about as we head for Friday and Juneteenth this year. Reverend Brown?
Yeah, I want, you know, this is our opportunity, I think, to stand together, right, around the work of racial justice that needs to happen in this country, and participate, I think, in the race, in the 5K race run or walk, and people can do that wherever they are. It really is an opportunity for solidarity to say, yes, this work that we need to do continues. And we want people to sign up, to run or virtually walk with us, right? We're carrying Ahmed Arbery with us this year in this walk, you know, as a symbol every black or brown body that could not continue to run and to walk because of racial violence. And so I think it's really important. It's another opportunity to stand in solidarity together, to say we believe in justice, we believe in one humanity, and participating in this Juneteenth run, walk, virtual 5K is one way that we can step together.
Gloria, how do people do that?
Okay, you go to itsyourrace.com and register, as simple as that. And it started 4 years ago, and I'm so excited to have so many participants. It's more than doubled. And starting a race was something very new to me. And so I'm very excited. We have, as of this moment, 281 participants from across the country. And I might have some relatives outside of the country participating as well. So it's going to be fun. Wherever you are, and people have started a month ago, 2 months ago, when we got this all online. So there's no rush, although it is coming to the final week. you have up until midnight, June 19th, to complete your event.
All right, and the website one more time, Gloria?
It's yourrace.com.
And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That is okay. Search Juneteenth. It should come right up, and then you'll be led to where to register or to make a donation.
You know, Gloria, Reverend Brown mentioned Mount Arbery, and I think it's so appropriate for anybody who participates in the 5K run and walk to be thinking about Mount Arbery this year. Just as I'm not the first to observe this, but boy, anybody who has participated in a moment of silence for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, you almost can't conceive how long 8 minutes and 46 seconds is until you do that and you understand that. What are you hoping
Absolutely.
People keep in mind, whether it's Ahmaud Arbery or others? What kind of impact are you hoping that perhaps Juneteenth's event this year can have on your participants, Gloria?
I would like people to be mindful of the significance of the day, Juneteenth, and mindful of where we are at this moment in time, and how far we have to go. And what are we actually willing to do? I mean, that's a scary question. And with all of this unrest, I mean, it's been ongoing, the unrest, but it's bubbling over now. And, you know, I've been very mindful of, like, what would I do for my freedom? We all celebrated Memorial Day, and we honor our soldiers and those that fight in many different ways, to secure this nation's freedom and to be a free people. But would we actually die for it? If it came to our front door, would we die for it? And I think that we're at that point. Would we die for it? And you see the amount of violence that has been ongoing, and what am I willing to do? If those citizens that were watching the awful murder of Mr. Floyd, if they rushed them, would they be willing to die if a police officer then turned their gun on them? It's like it is so significant. So I would like people to be thinking about this precious thing that we call freedom. I'm fine, but if my neighbor's not fine, am I fine with that? So, you know, it's a reckoning, I believe. It's also a reckoning in how we view our relationships with people. You know, people have many friends that are, you know, my friends have certainly been reaching out to me during this time, my white friends, and it's been very helpful. But I also, you know, want people to understand that if you're not with us, just get out of the way. And it's very simple. So just get out of the way. We need people to, you know, speak up and do what's right, but don't get in the way.
All right. Mary Hevron Smith, what do you want people to know about Juneteenth and Friday?
Well, join the race, run the race. And I would say this, I didn't know much about Juneteenth until I started working with Gloria last year on publicity. And I think it's really up to every one of us, as certainly as white supporters, to educate ourselves, to open the books, to look back and say, what did we miss? Because we've seen the lens of history through the eyes of the dominant culture. And now it's time to sort of re-see our past in a completely new light. I'm a descendant of a pioneer in Rochester, and so I remember the uprising of 1964, and kind of, I was nine, so I was a kid, but I was taking it in at a certain level, and now I watch Carbon Eisen's really wonderful documentary called July 64, and it's a way to re-see those days that I lived through from a distance and to understand exactly what was happening. And you know, I think it's just really important to, to be open, to set aside any kind of ego or preset ideas about what our only holidays should be, and really, you know, read the story and say why is it that we should celebrate Juneteenth? It wasn't until the last of the enslaved African Americans were freed. It wasn't until that moment, until June 19th, and that's really what we have to honor.
July 64 is airing tonight on WXXI-TV, by the way. 8
oh,
o'clock.
My gosh.
8
oh,
o'clock
excellent.
Tonight, July 64 on WXXI-TV.
Excellent.
Elizabeth, what do you want people thinking about as we head for June 19th? Juneteenth is the holiday, the 19th of June, and it is Friday. Go ahead.
I'm hoping people will realize that, particularly white people, there are ways to be allies, and that kind of stepping forward makes all the difference. Our church, First Universalist Church, became involved with this because we were inspired by Reverend Myra and the Spiritus Christi initiative called SPARC for anti-racism. So we started our own initiative, FIRE, First Universalist Initiative for Racial Equity. And we have been partnering with SPARC, so SPARC and FIRE are together, and we invite anyone else who would like to. And last June, our church as an entire congregation voted to support this initiative. And the ultimate initiative is to create a heritage site in Baden Park, and that is a result of work done by Spiritus Christi and dreams created by them, and I think can be created for the entire community. The donation for this walk, when people do participate, there's a $10 fee, will go toward that park along with other fundraisers we'll have throughout the year. And as people are walking in their yards, walking in their houses, biking, doing whatever kind of walks they do, if they can remember that together we can.
Let me get a little feedback from the audience here with questions. I already have two questions, and Reverend Brown, Kathleen says the following. Kathleen says, this may be a trivial conversation between my husband and myself, but I would appreciate a perspective from a black person. I am a 68-year-old white woman. I just ordered a Black Lives Matter t-shirt to wear wherever. Could be just a Wegmans. My husband thinks it is not my place or appropriate for me to wear this shirt because I'm white. I thought it would be supportive of the movement. My husband is worried that it's patronizing. Can you help? That's from Kathleen. Reverend Brown?
Yeah. So I say yay to Kathleen that she dons a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. I don't think that it's patronizing. I think that it brings a voice to what we are struggling with from the holdover, really from the legacies of slavery that gave us these ideologies of inferiority about black life, therefore that a narrative has been created in the ways in which black and brown bodies have been treated, that their lives don't matter. So I think that a white ally who dons a shirt that says Black Lives Matter and wears it is really reinforcing a very important message, especially in these times that we're in right now, where black and brown bodies, their monitoring of their movements and their lives are in jeopardy through community policing across the country and within structures that contribute to racial inequities that take the breath out of black life. And so I actually absolutely celebrate Kathleen and anybody, whether they're black or white or Asian or whatever their ethnicity is that they want to wear or race, that they want to wear a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. I say yay and thank you.
All right. Mark writes the following, says, Evan, thank you for this important and fascinating history lesson. I'm just learning about Juneteenth as a white man. Is it appropriate for me to wish people happy Juneteenth on Friday? Myra.
Can I talk with you?
Yeah.
I like that question.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Go.
Absolutely. Plain and simple, absolutely. Wish people happy Juneteenth.
Okay.
Yeah, so I agree with Gloria. I think part of my hesitancy is that Juneteenth, on its surface, right, celebrates the emancipation of chattel slavery. But we haven't emancipated Black life from the enslavement experiences within our institutional structures that continue to custodianize their bodies. And so, yes, you can say happy Juneteenth and join us in the work of full liberation, really, for all bodies and not just white bodies in America.
Okay. Gloria, anything you wanted to add to that, beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, I had started saying happy Juneteenth quite some time ago to people to bring the awareness. And when people say, oh, what is that? Then I can explain what that is. And there's no shame in not knowing because we have not been taught. We weren't raised with it, certainly like the 4th of July. So the more people that are, you know, knowledgeable of it, the better. So, yes, it is with pride. It's like, yes, happy Juneteenth. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it is something to be celebrated. We want to recognize that, you know, we have a lot of work to do, but we are recognizing that this is a celebration as well. And we can do both.
Sure. You know, Mary, if you say happy Juneteenth to someone and they don't know what it is, do you view it as an open door to start that conversation and to educate?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, one of the most helpful articles that I read was one by Henry Louis Gates Jr. And when he said that he didn't know much about it until he went to college, I thought, okay, well, it really is still an important date that is becoming known. But the other thing is I do think that the caller's question was so good because that's the exact question that I asked during our last Spark meeting is it really a celebration? Do you feel that it's a celebration? I asked this of the people of color on our sort of Zoom call because, you know, look at the news every single day. We're not there yet. And what Reverend Myra said is it is still a celebration. You know, and as I think about it, you know, the move away from that horrific institution, yes, we had 100 years of Jim Crow. We have all this stuff going on today, but we also have a huge step away from the most horrific thing that anybody can imagine, which is the life of a slave. And so it, you know, happy maybe it doesn't quite fit as a word, but it is. It's a celebration. It's a movement away, and maybe it's the moment that the country became a little bit more, what would we say, moral or on a higher moral ground, despite everything.
Moving towards it, yeah.
Moving toward it, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything you want to add, Elizabeth?
I think that conversation about celebrating and being hesitant to say celebrate is a good one because we are anxious about the fact that this is still going on, and yet let's celebrate where we have come and make a commitment to keep going.
All right, 844-295-TALK, listeners, if you want to call the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. White listeners, when's the first time you heard of Juneteenth? I'd love to hear that. That's probably its own conversation, but I'm very curious about that. Kevin in Rochester first on the phones. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, how you doing, Evan?
Good.
Just wanted to mention that the Black Cinema Series has a film coming up called Miss Juneteenth, and it's part of the ongoing Black Cinema. And because the little theater is on virtual, that's where people can catch the film. If they go to the website, the information, basically, the film's about a former beauty queen and single mom who prepares her rebellious teenage daughter for the Miss Teen pageant. What's significant about this film is the director, Janine Godfrey Peoples. She's an African director. This is her first feature film. Opens virtually on Friday, Friday, June 26th, there's going to be a panel discussion that people can access the Little's webpage. So again, the Black Cinema Series is presented by the Association of Black Journals and the Little Theater.
Well, Kevin, we're always proud of that, and you're kind of cut in and out, but I think we got the information there. We're certainly proud of that relationship with the Little and the work they're doing, and we appreciate that information. Thank you, Kevin Hicks, for the call and the information there. So there's you can put that on your calendar. And again, tonight, July 64 is airing on WXXI-TV at 8 p.m. A lot of good resources in the community. And we're talking about Juneteenth, which is Friday, with Reverend Myra Brown, pastor of Spiritus Christi Church and founder of the Spiritus Christi Anti-Racism Coalition. Gloria Johnson-Hovey is the race director for the Rock Juneteenth 5K Run and Walk. Mary Hebron Smith is a member of Spiritus Christi Church and a member of the Spiritus Christi Anti-Racism Coalition. And Elizabeth Osta is co-chair of the First Universalist Initiative for Racial Equity. And I want to ask Gloria about briefly, I had a note before the program from a number of listeners, and I think you had touched on it as well before the program, Gloria, about some of what we've seen in recent days. Right now, at this hour, City Council is meeting, Rochester City Council is meeting in person for the first time since the pandemic began. There are civil rights leaders who are there, who are challenging them about their budgeting, et cetera. Then there are also calls to do symbolic but important work as well in the eyes of many activists when it comes to statues, when it comes to representations, when it comes to statements of priorities like that. And there's some talk about Nathaniel Rochester and statue and representation there. What do you make of that, Gloria?
The rest of the story has to be told about Nathaniel Rochester, and it's time. This was something else that was really important to me, but didn't just happen. He was a slave owner and a slave trader, and he has a beautiful square on Alexander Street, a lovely little park. And prior to Martin Luther King Park concrete wall being painted, Martin Luther King had a concrete wall, and it was just, the economy was just crazy to me. I'm glad that the concrete wall is now painted beautifully, beautiful murals, but Nathaniel Rochester, we have to reckon with that. His mural underneath the bridge on Main Street next to Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony and such, that do we need that there? I would say it's time for that to be changed. The elementary school, Nathaniel Rochester, I think it's a number 3 school. I believe that name should be changed. It's time for us to do this. And if we don't do it now, when? It's long overdue. And if we don't remove the statue of Nathaniel Rochester, there needs to be an added plaque describing also the part where he was trading slaves and, slave owner. So we have to reckon with all of it.
So, Gloria, let me follow up with you, and then I'll ask your fellow panelists how they feel about this. I will sort of give away a little bit of my own bias about the debate about statues and say that I don't understand how it's even really controversial when certainly Confederate leaders have their statues taken down. And for those who say, well, are we supposed to erase our history? Shouldn't we? And the answer is no. But a statue is generally something that commemorates and celebrates. And I understand that history can be honored in different ways, or at least understood in different ways. But taking down a statue is not a way of erasing history. I've never understood that argument. And I honestly would like people who feel that way, send me an email and explain it to me. I'd like to listen to your views more on this, because I don't understand how taking down a statue erases history. To me, it says the priority of the community is to not celebrate this anymore. In particular, if you look at Confederate statues. They are. It's not like you walk up to Confederate statues across the country and there's a plaque there that says, this general did terrible things, but we should remember that. I mean, most of them are celebration statues, and the plaques commemorate that too. We're just not honest with ourselves about that. Now, when it comes to Nathaniel Rochester, do you think most people in our community are aware of that history, Gloria?
I would say, now this is just a guess, probably not. Probably not. But I think those that are aware of it or become aware of it, I think that there will be a lot of backlash to it. It's like, oh, you know, we're going to change everything. And people are afraid of change. And, you know, I don't think anything, nothing is permanent. And as times change, we have to change with the times. We can't unknow something, you know. So we have to recognize that, yeah, maybe things need to come down that are more accurate to what it is that we are doing as a community.
Okay. Reverend Brown.
I think that the images that we celebrate and that we lift up come with a message. And I think that if the message is one of racial inferiority, if it's a message of a reminder of racial terror, if it's a message of a reminder of the less humane treatment for black and brown bodies in this country, then absolutely those statues and that messaging should come down, because it is an ongoing sign of dehumanization of one race of people over another. And so I would agree with you. I don't think there is a debate. I think that we have to embody as one human family the values that we say we espouse to. And if we espouse to the values of, you know, everybody being equal and all people being created equal, then we should have symbols and statues and messaging that is in line with that.
Okay. Mary, what do you think?
You know, there's the work, I think part of the work of racial justice in being a white person and doing the work of racial justice is getting over the sort of like the gulp factor. Like you go, oh my God, not Nathaniel Rochester, you know? And so my initial reaction was, oh my gosh, no. But as I think about it, it's like, well, why? Why would he has to go under the microscope too. We have to scrutinize what his life was like. And if it wasn't what we stand for in Rochester, we're very proud in Rochester of this history of being the home of Frederick Douglass and abolitionists and Susan B. Anthony and all of that. But we have to live that, and we have to show people that we really, that we're willing to scrutinize everything in this city in order to not only achieve justice, but to symbolize that. And I'll also add that we're a city that's loaded with artistic talent. So however we go about that, whether it's a plaque beside it that explains the reality or whether it's a replacement, you know, I'll leave that to people who are good at that. But nothing should escape the scrutiny of, you know, of our lens today, where we're really trying to be supportive and just.
Elizabeth?
I'm stunned because I just did a quick web search as we were sitting and discussing this, and Wikipedia does not mention that Nathaniel Rochester is a slave owner. I do not doubt that he was a slave owner. What I doubt is the education that I've been given and that many of us have been given that deletes the more important aspects of people's characters, because we still have this legacy of hiding the racism in our education and in our country. Makes me crazy. So I support and applaud Gloria for bringing it up and Myra for supporting it. And I hope that we can, as a country and as a nation, find the truth behind what it is we celebrate and what it is we value.
After our only break of the hour, we'll get back to more of your phone calls. We're talking about the second, and it's not a lesser. It is just the other Independence Day that this country has. I mean, most people think of July 4th, 1776. Not everyone also thinks of June 19th, 1865. Juneteenth is the 19th of June every year, and it marks June 19th, 1865, when a Union general Following the surrender of Robert E. Lee, General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas, and the news hadn't permeated Texas that the war was over and that that there was no slavery permitted under the Union anymore, and made that announcement on June 19th, 1865. So it's an Independence Day. And we're talking about the history and the impact, especially now, with our guests. And we'll get more of your feedback after our only break. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. If you have surgery and you tell the doctor that you don't want opioids for pain relief, will the doctor follow your wishes? They probably should. There are guidelines for this, and a lot of this has changed over the years, but a New York Times columnist said that recently she was told she had to take an opioid prescription. We're going to talk about where pain relief stands Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jim in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, good show, Evan.
Thank you, sir.
Because the Juneteenth is a monumental celebration because we didn't have technology then like we have now. And I doubt if we even had telegraph back in those days. And things usually traveled by horse and mail. That's why they had the Western Union. They really brought you a message by having a carrier delivered it from town to town, state to state, vis-a-vis horseback. But anyway, that was a monumental celebration, and we still have to acknowledge that, especially people of African descent, because it was on the movement and on the way toward having a more perfect union. But I want to say something else, and I think this is just as important. There has been a highlighted movement by retired four-star, three-star admirals, generals in the United States Navy, Air Force, Army, about renaming all of these forts military bases, major training facilities across the South Pacifically, Fort Lee in Petersburg, Virginia, Fort Benning in North Carolina, Jacksonville, North Carolina, I think, Fort Polk in Louisiana, and there's another one out in Texas, Fort Hood, which are major military installations that were named after generals, leaders in the Confederate Army who took up arms and fought against the United States of America. Now, any other logical thinking nation would say that's treason. Dwight Eisenhower, who commanded the greatest military force ever gathered in the history of warfare on this earth, never took up arms against the United States. Petraeus, the great general who just got us out of Afghanistan and Iraq, four-star, he's a scholar. He never took up arms against the United States. I could go down the list. Omaha Bradley, George Preston Marshall, the first chief of staff, Nimitz, the great Navy general, admiral, rather, during World War II, the Battle of Leyte Gulf, Midway. He planned all of that, defeated the Japanese because they wanted to take over the Pacific side of the ocean, of control all of that. They never took up arms, but yet Bobby Lee did. There was another one down there, a big training facility called Camp Pickett, right off US-1. He took up arms, so that's why things have to change, and we have to set the record straight. What's the historical record? You know, there's a football coach that won all the Super Bowls. I think his nickname was Tuna. He said, "You are what your record say you are. If you're a 4-10 team, you're a 4-10 team. If you're a 12-2 team, you're a 12-2 team. You are what your records say you are." And we can't sanitize it. We can't lie about it anymore. And we're going to face it square up. And I want to say something. You had a bunch of young kids on, well, I call them young. I'm a certified senior citizen, in your show earlier. And the way they think and we're talking, that's the future of this country, if it's going to continue to be a United States of America. And I'm happy to know that they're thinking outside the box. They aren't doing the traditional orthodoxy and go along to get along. They're thinking outside the box, and that's very, very important. Now, I would like to hear your guest comment, and that was my little 2 cents piece of the day.
Jim, great to hear from you. Thank you, sir. Thanks for the phone call. Reverend Brown, I'll let you respond first to some of what you heard from Jim.
Yeah, I would share Jim's sentiment. I think that those bases need to be renamed. I mean, these are folks who fought for the maintaining of the institution of slavery, right, in fighting against the country. And I think he's right. Like, again, it's a way to message that space. I think the spaces that we're in, the places that we're in, and the names that we put on those spaces matter. They carry the spirit of the history that are in those places. And absolutely, I think we are in a place in America where we come to an awareness of, I think we're starting to come to the awareness of really the sin of our original sin of slavery and this legacy that it has brought. I think we're ready to address this legacy and say that we made a mistake. We never should have allowed those things to be named and to be lifted up in some place of honor when they've caused, you know, those actors have caused so much devastation and so much of taking of life and division within the human family. Absolutely, we should rename those. We should live into and embody and walk our walk and talk the talk and walk the walk. If we are truly interested in being a United States of America, then it has to include not just the lens of those who are white in power, who have made those decisions to name those places, but to also be able to look at them again for those of us who now are charged with our future and say, you know what, we need to redress that, and those names need to be changed.
Well, and let me follow up with Reverend Brown and with all of our guests. You know, Jim raises a passionate point about these forts, these bases and installations. We've talked about statues, but we also have talked about a wide range of issues based on the current movements. And no one should be confused that the movements would start and end with a statue, nor would anybody say that the statues aren't important. I mean, there's a reason that these are important symbols, but that's not the only thing that matters, and that's not what the movement is only focused on. And so let me broaden it out, and I'll start with Reverend Brown on this. You know, right now, this hour, there are civil rights leaders led by four women of color, who are with city council right now, making their case for, among other things, a dramatic defunding and reprioritization of city funds for policing. And we know at least one member of city council who is going to support at least defunding police by 50%. I don't yet know where the rest of council will stand on this. How important is that component of this movement right now, Reverend Brown?
I think that component is very important, right? So particularly as we're talking about Juneteenth, like Juneteenth and that celebration of the emancipation from slavery is really about the fact that during the events of slavery, right, slave patrols became the early blueprint for policing black and brown bodies in this country with the goal to maintain social control, political power, and economic power for the benefits of whites who held systemic power. And so really our current systems of policing were birthed out of that ideology. And so we have been long overdue to really reimagine policing. So whether you use the word defunding police, which really is about reimagining policing and reimagining policing budgets from how we started in terms of the original blueprint. So I absolutely think that it's very critical for every city to think about reimagining policing budgets so that we can really tool cities with the kinds of programs, the kind of resources that we need to create the kind of equity that we say that we want. Like, it's not organic. It's not going to just happen because we spew rhetoric. It's not going to happen because we try to get police and community members to just get along. It's going to happen when we put our resources where we say our values are. And I think Kamala Harris is absolutely right when she says, you know, public safety isn't just about policing. It's about creating healthy communities. And so I don't know of any mayor in any city who should resist the campaign to reimagine policing through moving those resources in places where they need to go.
Gloria Johnson-Hovey, what do you think?
I think that it is time for us to, like Reverend Brown said, that reimagine it. My father was a police officer in Harlem, and during the Serpico years, where the police were on the take, and it was just a very, very difficult time. My father is since deceased, so I don't have a chance to talk to him about what all that went on. I get stories from others that worked with him, but he had a very, very tough time as far as being a black police officer in Harlem, and as a minority. And then my son is a police officer, works for the sheriff's office in Jacksonville, Florida, and my brother he just retired recently in New York as well. So I come from a long line of honoring the police, loving the police, and so my experience with the police is they've been my friend, but knowing this dark side of the policing that goes on and how it goes on in several situations, that has to change. I mean, they were also called peace officers. That was a term that was used. They certainly moved away from it, and perhaps some precincts never even grasped the idea of peace officers. But, I had the chance to ride along with my son in January when I went to a visit, and I was struck by how polite these young officers were to all the people that they, the rides that I went along with, that they were to the people that they were there to help. And that was so encouraging that these young people, it's like they had this attitude and air about them that, talking to them and being very helpful and respectful and kind. And I came away from that feeling very happy. One is that it's a southern state, and I wasn't sure what I was going to see. And very pleased that, it is happening in areas. There's a lot of good work that police can do and are doing to be supportive of the neighborhoods that they're working in. But my gosh, we do have to go through everything with a fine tooth comb and make sure that there are things that are absolutely off the books, the choke holes and, what appears to be very obvious now, it has to be scrutinized. Just as we would scrutinize, I worked for the school district. The school district has been scrutinized. Every entity needs to be looked at. And so the police are no different than, looking at, okay, how are we teaching? How are we, relating to families and our students? How are they relating to the community? How are they relating to, the people that they're supposed to serve? So we definitely have to reimagine it and, in some cases start completely over for some of these more egregious horrible acts that have recently been coming to our attention.
Hmm. Mary Hebron Smith, what do you think?
I wish I had a perfect solution. I would say that the problem is crying to us every single day. And so I like the word reimagine. We do need to reimagine. I also have close ties to, in policemen who were my ancestors, have friends in the Webster Police Department where I live. Good cops need to speak out, I suppose, and say how and exactly these things will not happen in their communities. But the deeper work needs to be done as well, the legal, the court work, the Supreme Court protection of, there can't be privilege protection of policemen. And this is what I think we've seen for too long. It's too much. So I would say, yes, it's time to scrutinize and to look at every single police department and see what is going on and how we can ensure justice for all.
Okay, Elizabeth.
Well, I'm delighted that Governor Cuomo has spoken out on this and talked about funding for police departments if they don't do a revamp of their departments. And I'm thrilled to see that our city has begun this conversation because it needs to be begun. The institutional and structural racism that is part of a lot of our institutions includes the police department, and that's just a an is. It's not anybody's, well, I can't say it's nobody's fault, but it's not something we have to put blame for. We have to put a fix on it. And speaking of a fix, there is a book done by the Rochester Library called We Called Her Anna, and that's the name of Rochester, Colonel Nathaniel Rochester's slave. So we do, and that was part of the 175th celebration that that book was published. So we are open to our errors and our history.
One of our listeners sent a note asking, let's see here, Richard, calling from Locke, New York, says, in front of every school building in the state, there's a digital sign and an electronic billboard. Can't they post something about Juneteenth, educate the community, put that more out there? Reverend Brown, what can communities do to acknowledge and to honor and to celebrate Juneteenth on Friday?
I absolutely love that. I think I love what the caller is suggesting. I think if there are billboards, that would be fabulous for people to acknowledge Juneteenth. I think people could order a Juneteenth flag and hang it. I've ordered mine, and I'm waiting for it to come. We've asked City of Rochester to raise the Juneteenth flag. I think our politicians and community leaders, anywhere that you can raise it and acknowledge it, use it as a teaching tool for our city and our state, I think would be all the ways that people can educate and participate in the acknowledgement and celebration of Juneteenth.
All right, Gloria, what can people do?
Oh, I love this question. Thank you. Yes, raise the flag. I would hope that every local, every village office in Pittsburgh, Brighton, every town supervisor will be ordering a Juneteenth flag, and if it doesn't come for Juneteenth, they can still get it and put it up. So now is the time for every flagpole to be raising the Juneteenth flag. And I asked the mayor in a letter that we keep it raised. And I don't know what the details are about it, but she did raise it last year, and we're very excited and happy about that. And now, you know, but it comes down in a week. So I would love it to be, side by side with the American flag, because that is America. That is America. We have two Independence Days, and if more we get used to thinking of our lives as having two Independence Days, because in 1776, there were still slaves, and Frederick Douglass's speech to "What to the Slave is 4th of July" is a great one to listen to. I also am challenging supermarkets to sell Juneteenth flags. So, you know, as customers, you know, we could go and decorate our lawns and our gardens with the American flag and the Juneteenth flag. You know, this is one way that people can get on board and understand that, yes, this is something we can do. The same with balloons. So the way that you would have a 4th of July sale, you will have a Juneteenth sale for the backyard barbecues.
Mm-hmm. So. Lots of ways to do it. Mary Heveron Smith, what about you? What do you think?
Well, my husband Steve and I have ordered our Juneteenth flag, so it's on the way. We'll get something in the front yard if it doesn't get here on time. We also contacted local leaders just to make sure that they were aware of the Juneteenth race. And, we ended up with some really productive conversations with that. So I think opening the conversation with people that you know and friends, officials, politicians, everybody needs to know this and to understand that it really should be part of our American celebration.
All right. Elizabeth Osten.
I'm excited that Juneteenth is getting more notoriety and delighted that it can get continued notoriety. One of the things I'd suggest to folks who want to participate is after they register, take a very easy stroll from Joseph Avenue around the block and Upper Falls Boulevard over to the future site of the heritage site that's being built as our Civil Rights Memorial. And in that walk, they can do their Juneteenth event and contribute funds to the site and also raise awareness. And it's great to have a broader scope of people walking those neighborhoods.
All right, and before the hour is up, Gloria Johnson-Hovey is the race director for the Rock Juneteenth 5K Run and Walk. A little bit different this year. Remind our listeners how they can get involved.
Okay, go to itsyourrace.com and register. Very simple. It will lead you to it through the registration. It's painless. And also, there's a place to donate. So we look forward to seeing the list grow and the participation. And if you want to email me your pictures, please take a photo or a quick little video of you walking or running, where your route is, and we will upload it and we'll create a Juneteenth celebration that we can have virtually online. So, yeah, please participate. Thank you for the interest, and, you know, we're not done yet.
Most beautiful weather week of the year for it, too. So you're going to have people out running and walking, and whether they're thinking about Ahmaud Arbery or just the history of Juneteenth or this remarkable moment we're in, it's a chance to do that, to participate, and now you know how to do that. And Gloria Johnson-Hovey, thanks for educating us, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend.
Reverend
Thank
you, Myra Evan. Brown, Elizabeth Osta, Mary Hebron Smith, thanks to all of you for this wonderful conversation this hour. And I hope sometime soon, I hope I can see you in person. But thanks for being with us.
That'd be great. Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth to all of you. And listeners, hope that was a helpful hour for a lot of people sending emails saying there's a history that we didn't know about. Well, there you go. Rob Braden is the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful afternoon. And we will talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.